So you can continue in a Bhagavad Gita. When was the last time you stopped at? So this is from Srimad Bhagavad Gita. This is 18th chapter, text 54. Brahmabhuta prasanatmana shochati na kaṅkṣati samasarvesu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. I can just read the translation. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires of anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. To the impersonalist, achieving the Brahma-Bhuta stage, becoming one with the Absolute, is the last word. But for the personalist or pure devotee, one is to go still further to become engaged in pure devotional service. This means that one who is engaged in pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord is already in a state of liberation called Brahma-Bhuta, oneness with the Absolute. Without being one with the Supreme, the Absolute, one cannot render service unto Him. In the Absolute conception, there is no difference between the served and the servitor. Yet distinction is there in a higher spiritual sense. In a material concept of life, when one works for sense gratification, there is misery. But in the Absolute world, when one is engaged in pure devotional service, there is no misery. The devotee in Krishna consciousness has nothing for which to lament or desire. Since God is full, a living entity who is engaged in God's service in Krishna consciousness becomes also full in himself. He is just like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Because a pure devotee has no thought other than Krishna, he is naturally always joyful. He does not lament for any material loss or aspire for gain, because he is full in the service of the Lord. He has no desire for material enjoyment, because he knows that every living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and therefore eternally a servant. He does not see within the material world someone as higher or someone as lower. Higher and lower positions are ephemeral. Illusory, and at a devotee has nothing to do with this illusory appearance of appearances or disappearances. For him, stone and gold are of equal value. This is the Brahma-Bhuta stage, and this stage is attained very easily by the pure devotee. In that stage of existence, the idea of becoming one with the Supreme Brahman and annihilating one's individuality becomes hellish. The idea of attaining the heavenly kingdom becomes phantasmagoria, and the senses are like serpent's teeth that are broken. As there is no fear of a serpent with broken teeth, there is no fear from the senses when they are automatically controlled. The world is miserable for the materially infected person, but for a devotee the entire world is as good as Vaikuntha or the spiritual sky. The highest personality in this material universe is no more significant than an end for a devotee. Such a stage can be achieved by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, and who preached a pure devotional service in this age. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed towards every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. So this shloka was very often quoted by Srila Prabhupada and very often also explained, because it can be very easily misunderstood. There are certain states of consciousness described here which, if one imitates without proper realization, one ends up completely at the wrong end. So Krishna consciousness, one can say, is dangerous without proper guidance and proper understanding. It is a very powerful thing. Srila Prabhupada once said to one of his disciples, "This philosophy is so powerful it can cut, but it doesn't mean you can go around and kill people with it." It's a great responsibility actually, because here we get the absolute knowledge. There is nothing higher as that, and one who accepts this simply in academical sense without any realization may, and that's how you can test it, if somebody is using this knowledge and he becomes proud, then he got it completely wrong. Because the first symptom of knowledge described in the very same Bhagavad Gita is humility. If this is not there, and humility means to understand one's position. I'm very, very small. So small, and my condition in this world is rather a very confused one. Otherwise, why do I ask and why do I search? Well, because I'm confused. You know, people always go, no, I don't think it's like this. So how is it? Well, basically, you don't get any real answer, you know. No, they think this is wrong, so what is right? No, I'm searching. Some even make a lifelong professional career out of this, just by searching. Which is actually good, we encourage, yeah, keep on searching, but sometime it would be nice if you come to some end to it, some conclusion. This is one of these things which some people find disturbing about this movement, it's so conclusive. It is like that. And they always go, well, you know, that was a pretty quick answer. Don't you think it could be, maybe, it could be also like that? You know, they get very uneasy feelings. They call us sometimes fanatics and all kinds of things because they think, you look like you know everything. You have an answer for everything. And we can say yes. And then they go, you know, they think, that's not possible. Well, who is you to say it's not possible? That sounds very authoritative. That sounds very conclusive. You know, it's not possible to come to any conclusion. Well, that's a heavy conclusion in itself. You know, there is no absolute truth. Well, who said so? Well, me, you know, here from Maribor, I said there is no absolute truth. Because Maribor is the center of the universe. So it's like we have to understand, once Prabhupada seeing one of his disciples becoming proud. Because in the presence of Srila Prabhupada, it was quite easy actually to become proud, because this movement was spreading like anything. You were part of something so big and so dynamic. It was daily growing in front of your eyes. And you were on top of it. So you thought, wow, I'm becoming really big. So Prabhupada, seeing the pride growing in the heart of his disciple, he told him, you know, in a very personal way, they had a very personal conversation, he said, you know, this universe is just one of many universes, and there are so many universes as mustard seeds, you know, these round little black balls, in a big sack. And in one of these seeds, there are so many planetary systems. And in these many, many planetary systems, we are living in one. And then there are many, many planets. And one of the planets, that's the Earth. It's not the biggest one. And it's not the center. And then on the Earth, there are so many continents surrounded by so much water. So, and on these continents, there are so many countries. And on these countries, there are so many cities, big, like New York, we are sitting now in. And in New York, there are so many blocks and so many streets. And in one of the blocks, there are so many houses. And in one house, they are so high, there are so many apartments. And in one of the apartments we are sitting now, is sitting you, and you think you are God. So it was like, it's like a zoom, you know, you just zoom somebody down to the real position. We are very small, very little. You know, and this body, it's not a very big thing, really. It is important because we are living in it, but as soon as we leave, it becomes completely unimportant. Nobody keeps dead bodies at home, really. Some people I heard they do, but that's really bizarre. So it immediately becomes useless, because the materials, they're not very useful, you know. So immediately, it's gone. We are gone, the body is useless. You burn it, you bury it. In India, they have they are very ecological. They put it on a big platform so the birds have something to eat. you know, so it becomes a stool. So, you know, so it's not really that. And it's very fragile. There are much bigger bodies and much more solid bodies. If you have a body of an elephant, you can just go and everybody backs away. You know. But I can go and so what? You know. When little needle I put into this body, a little needle, it's so fragile. Immediately we feel pain. It's a very fragile thing actually. It breaks quite easily and it's not very solid. But the false ego, that's the feeling. I am. Yes. I'm important. Somehow I'm important. Even children, as soon as one is born, you can see it. The children, they have their own world, you know. Yeah, they just think, no, this is very important. He took my gummy duck. You know, that's a tragedy. I want my gummy duck back. You know, so it's very serious. I'm very serious about it. They cry and it's very dramatic. Grown-up people, they go, yeah, it's okay, it's just a gummy duck. But actually, from even demigod point of view, we are also like little children. We are struggling with our big gummy ducks, you know, and we think, oh, the tragedy of life. But actually, from another perspective, we are just like children. You know, we are like little creatures crawling around. So one who is transcendentally situated and understands the spiritual essence of all this, first of all, he becomes very joyful. And where is the joy coming from? It comes because he doesn't desire anything. What makes us miserable is desires. And especially those we didn't fulfill yet. So we always want something. And immediately we are facing the situation, we don't get it. And of course, we become miserable. You know? Or we get the wrong thing. You know? People feel cheated. I want the ideal present, the ideal object. There's always some fault. There's always something missing. Krishna is saying very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita, wherever there is some action, there is a fault. As a fire always is accompanied by smoke, so there is always some fault. So don't expect any perfection, really. To find faults, especially in this age, which is called the ocean of faults, is so easy. There's always something missing. But we look for perfection subconsciously. We want something ideal. You know, a man looks for an ideal woman. Then he thinks, oh, this is ideal. Such a beauty. Such a eloquence. And then the woman starts to speak and he realizes, oh no, and such a stupidity. It's the same thing for a man. I'm in a man body, so I never understood why women like men. I really don't understand that. I have no understanding of this. It's kind of box, you know, with hair growing out of it, and not very subtly, you know. You know. They go, oh, this is such a beautiful man. They don't even understand the guy is stupid. That they find later on. But anyway. Then he realized, big surprise. Oh no, he is so stupid. You know how many women I met in my life who even after 20 years marriage tells you, I never knew who that man was I was living with. I never discovered it really. Who is this? This is how illusion works. So powerful. And I always do so tell them, well, maybe finally you came to some reality, you know? Yeah. Some realization. Now, Krishna consciousness is about realization. Therefore, right away from the beginning, the first information is there will be no perfection. It's perfectly imperfect. That's how this world is designed. There's always something missing. So we try harder to make it perfect. And there's always a little bit more missing, and then we try more harder. And after a whole lifetime of trying, then we die. I'm frustrated. Well, I didn't fix it. This was just about to be perfect. Now I am dying. And Krishna goes, yes, sure, why not? Then take another body. Try harder. And then again we are born. Therefore you see the babies being born, they are so enthusiastic. Because they are determined to try again. You know. And so just Krishna is so merciful. So you don't remember all that thing you didn't accomplish in previous lives. He allows you to forget that. And then you are born, you say, hey, I have a new start. Okay, let's start again. There were people get babies, you know, and dogs, because they're always optimistic. You know, yeah. Because they're always just, here we go, here we go. Dog is also like this. And here we go. He doesn't know where to go. He has no idea how long his life, or he has no idea about his life at all, but he's enthusiastic. Yes, here we go. Yes, yes. And he always welcomes you. And this way, dogs and babies are quite similar, actually. The baby always needs you, always, I remember carrying my daughter. Yeah, I don't want to get autobiographic, but my daughter was for 10 years growing on me. She didn't walk. She didn't see any need to walk, because I was carrying her all the time. So, and she actually made always sure I look in the same direction, and that's here. Children are very honest sometimes, you know. So when she noticed I'm too busy, I'm looking everywhere, then she grabbed me on her ear like this, and she was going, no, this way you look. You know, this, here, me, I'm here. You know, very honest. Actually, grown-up people do often the same, but they camouflage the whole thing. They also want attention and they want to be seen, but they do it in a much more complicated way. Children are very honest. When they don't like something, they throw it away. When they are envious, they go and they punch the other one, you know, and they take it away from him. Very simple, very honest, you know, yeah. You can find it in this kind of movies. One child eats the ice cream and the other one doesn't have an ice cream. So it goes and just punch him the ice cream in the face. So now you don't have it either. Very honest, you know. So simple. Grown-up people do the same, but they have all kinds of trickery and, you know, and all kinds of things how to actually cover it up. So, if one is never laments or desires to have anything, that provokes like a state of passivity, isn't it? No, it's not. What it means here, he never laments or desires to have anything which is not his quota, which is not given to him in a somewhat natural way. We all have our quota. Already there, where we are born, there is a certain amount of things we are destined to get, and there is a certain amount of things destined to lose. There is a certain amount of happiness coming to us, and there is a certain amount of unhappiness. So what this shloka is saying, leave it. Don't do much about it. Just live with it. You know, just be satisfied. Okay, maybe I have a little bit less like he has. Well, it wasn't given to him. I was this year in India, big cities like Salem or Bangalore, South India. Actually, what shocked me once again, you know, how little actually envy is there between the people, proportionally spoken to the West. Everybody's checking what the other one has, what is the neighbor. Oh, they bought a new car. We also have a new car. They were checking each other. In India, they don't really care so much. They are busy, they want more. Yeah, the concept of have more, that's important, yes, yes. But they even respect. Oh, he got more. That means God gave him more, yes. That means he must have been more pious in the past, and now he got more. They respect that. You know, why? And in this way, automatically, some sort of satisfaction arrives. Satisfaction arrives in the absence of envy. Envy is an amazing quality. From all the different qualities, anger and, you know, and greed and all this, envy is amazing. Because like to get angry, it takes a little while. You know, you see something and you go, what is this song? It takes greed that you have to also cultivate. No, I want more. I have to plan. I want more. But envy, it's instant, spontaneous, doesn't take even 1 second. It's immediately there. Why does he have that? I don't have it. He shouldn't have it. Why is he had? You know, he didn't deserve that. We have to arrange. He doesn't. Why does he have it? I remember there's different kinds of envy. I can give you a whole description. There's Swedish envy. That's a technical term in the business world. Mm-hmm. Swedish envy. Very dangerous. It's like it comes out in a very polite way. It remembers me on the coat of samurais. You know, samurai with this Japanese sword. They had this precise codes how to kill each other or how to kill the opponent. They invited him for a tea. They served him. They accommodated him. And all the time, both of them waited for the moment where the other one doesn't pay attention. But it was not there. They were very careful. They were very trained. They served him the tea and always watched his hands. And every movement was exactly calculated. However, sometimes one of them, just for 1 second, didn't pay attention. Immediately the other one jumped up, pulled the sweat, and was going, and that was the end of him. Immediately. It's called Swedish envy. You can wait for a long time until the other one makes one mistake. And he's careful, so you are also careful. And then on a certain point, exactly there where he doesn't expect that, he's finished. So you know, so this is very dangerous envy. And then there's a simple envy. That's most of the people. I remember where I, after 30 years not being in Czech Republic, I was son of the immigrants, so I didn't grow up in communism, really. So when the communism was finished, I came back to Czech Republic. And I went on the street distributing these books. And a woman came to me. I came from the West, you know. So I came from Sweden. And the only question she had, where did you bought this jacket? You know, she just checked my jacket out. And she was immediately very simply envious. Because such a jacket at that time you couldn't buy in Czech Republic yet. Well, now it's all, you can buy whatever you want, but it was something special. So she was immediately, where did you buy this jacket? I was going like, wow, that's a simple envy. You know, I know this will never happen to you in Sweden or in Germany or somebody coming and going, where did you buy this? And he's touching you like this. So this is simple envy. You know, this is very easy readable. But envy, this is actually the basic quality which keeps us in this material world. Therefore you find in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is begging his readers, please don't be envious, accept the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. People go, I'm not envious on Hare Krishna. You mean I'm envious on your dhoti there, on this piece of cloth or what? No, they are envious on that they instantly feel he knows something else. He knows something I don't know. That's already enough. Immediately people get envious. When you distribute these books, you meet it all the time. They instantly go, I don't need this. I'm completely happy. You know, just to get rid of you. Just, no. They get sometimes really angry. I remember one incident, we used to sit on a floor chanting Hare Krishna in the city of Göteborg, that's Sweden. And we used to sit on a carpet. We found a carpet. Somebody brought a carpet. And we brought a carpet and we sit down on the pavement and we were just chanting. And somebody, a very angry man, came up from the crowd which was watching. And he was not interested in the chanting. He was not interested in us. He was interested in the carpet. And he lift up the corner of the carpet where you have this little mark there which shows what quality and possibly the price tag is still on it. And he was just checking how expensive the carpet is. That was his only interest in Harina. That's called envy. There are so many examples. You know, there is a built-in envy between male and female. It's there. You know, Prabhupada said, it's business. How much do you enjoy? Do you enjoy more like me? No, you shouldn't. You should at least enjoy equally. You know? Did you enjoy more like me? Why didn't I enjoy like you? It's always there somewhere. So, how to contradict all this? Well, we have a very simple procedure in Krishna consciousness, and that's called service. Devotees have the luxury, even when they feel the envy coming up, they just go to that particular devotee they envy and go, Prabhu, I'm so envious on you. Can I do some service for you? Naturally, a devotee will go, Prabhu, wait, come on, can I serve you? And as soon as this is established, the whole envy is gone. Instantly. As quickly it came, it's gone. This is how we constructively address these kind of qualities, which are entirely detrimental for Krishna consciousness.
We cannot go back home, back to Guru and be envious on Krishna. That's not possible. That's how we came here. And the envy is so subtle, even the slightest notion of this, even in a spiritual environment, immediately brings us to a fall down. Spiritual world is zero envy. There is competition, there is this kind of things out there, yeah. But it's loving. There's even competition, who will serve more Krishna and all this. And there is a competition, and the winner is praised by everybody, by the losers. They are praising him. Oh, you serve Krishna so nicely. There was actually a problem devotees had with that. You know, coming from the hippie generation where there was clearly established, we are all one and the same. No envy and no competition. Then they came to Hare Krishna movement, and there was a competition, who will distribute more books, who will, you know. And I know some of these new devotees, they got very uneasy. They said, what is this? I renounced the whole thing, competition, and now he is again. It's not spiritual. Prabhupada said, no. There is a spiritual competition. But the difference is that the winner is praised by the loser. In the material world, the winner is hated by the loser. He was winning, I was losing. Ah, I hate him. That's envy. But in the spiritual world, if somebody is actually doing more service, then he's inspiring to the one who feel they did less service, and they get inspiration, and they also try to do more service. And ultimately, Srila Prabhupada wrote me personally in a letter, he said, devotional service is absolute. There is no, you know, diminishment in quality. The quality is the same. So it is all transcendental. You know, but there is also division even there. Krishna says, this devotee is most dear to me. That doesn't make the other devotee less dear. This is transcendental. In the material world, when you say, this is most dear, that means the other ones are not so dear. No. In a spiritual sense, when Krishna says, this is most dear, then the other ones are also dear. Therefore, you find it quite confusing in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami writes, and this Vaishnava is the best of Vaishnavas. And the next chapter is, this Vaishnava is the best of Vaishnavas. You think, hey, wait a minute, who is the best here? You know, it cannot be all best. They can. In a spiritual sense, you can be all best. It doesn't matter. So this is spiritual world. Everybody can be best. And because they are worshipping the supreme best. Yeah, and that's Krishna. So this is actually the vision. One never laments or desires to have anything means outside of one's given quota. One is satisfied, Krishna says elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, whatever comes on its own accord. That means whatever is given. Okay. I mean, we have to work. Krishna says very clear in the Bhagavad Gita, there is eating, sleeping, mating and defending has to be maintained. That's connected to this body. So, but in a simple way. We don't have to increase the standards. This is what this whole society is driven to the point of insanity. Because they always increase. They call it advancement. You buy more, you are advancing. You consume more, you are advancing. It's a completely wrong concept. It's actually an animalistic concept. You ever saw pigs eating together? The pig is eating, is afraid the other ones will eat more, so he eats his thing too. They are fighting, they are pushing. More. Sometimes they get heart attack while they are fighting. Yeah? That's a whole big consciousness. More, I want more. So no. Whatever comes on its own accord, he neither laments when he's losing. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, to those who constantly worship me, meditate, I give what they need and I protect what they have. What an insurance company. Just imagine an insurance company has advertisement. We give you what you need and we protect what you have. Well, nobody can say that. You know, only Krishna can say that. But he doesn't say, I give you what you want. He says, I give you what you need. So in this way, when everybody starts to understand like this, and it used to be in a society, somewhat even remotely religious society, there was already more peace. There was always some problem. I remember speaking even to the real, you can still find it somewhere, here also, speaking to the real old generation of people. I used to live, you know, even as a devotee, I used to live in a small Czech village, which was completely abandoned by all the young people. So it was just the Hare Krishna, we had a little community there, and the old people. It was quite amazing, actually. We find quite some sympathy amongst the old. First of all, they were afraid they will stay completely alone. There was just one old woman who was crying when I got the house next to her. She said, oh, finally, there will be some light here in the window again. Because they saw the whole village being just emptied out. You know, and when you are 70, 80 years old. She just died 1 week ago, I got to hear, no. So she was so happy, devotees. She didn't care, devotees. She said, somebody is here. And of course we talked to her, and it was a very pious lady. You know, even she had her, you know, rabbits she was eating. My daughter was, when she was growing up, she was always visiting the little rabbits. And then she asked her, they are so nice, why are you eating them? And the lady had no answer. She said, well, we have to eat something. And my daughter, I mean, she was 4 years old, she said, but we are also eating and we are not killing any rabbits. You know, she was really preaching to heaven. She had no answer. But she was so happy. Somebody was here. She was so happy and this. And she told me, you know, previously, people were not on the Brahma Buddha platform. But they were much more satisfied because they didn't consume so much, so insanely. Like when she was a young girl, she asked her father, you know, I guess I have to get married. To whom? And he just showed over the fence. There was the boy from the neighbors. He said, to him. He said, you will not find a better man in your life. They were married together for 72 years. You know, she said, my father was right. She said, in 70 years we didn't have one conflict. I believed that. She was serious. There was an honest lady. How come? You know, that's also karma, you can say. You sure it's karma? But people are not so agitated, always like, mom, mom. She told me, her grandmother told her a big piece of wisdom. He said, never go to Prague, that's 50 kilometers away. He said, never go there. They will teach you to want all these things you don't need. It's almost preaching, you know. This is like, her grandmother told her, no, don't go there. Be, you know, we are quite okay here. And actually, you know, being even lectures, what to speak, shudras, these people emanate some sort of satisfaction. Because they were never agitated. More, more. I knew even her husband, he's a Maori, he liked me always. When he saw me, he said, come here, sit down here. And he was always sitting on a porch in front of his house, you know. And I had to sit next to him. Not a big preaching field. He was just happy I can sit next to him. And I will never forget his funny shoes. It was gummi shoes, which he turned in the summer into summer shoes by cutting off the top with a knife. You know, because there was so much mate and chicken stool and who knows what. So he needed gummi shoes. So in the summer it was too hot. So he cut the top with a knife and there was a summer gummi shoes. And he was very happy with that. He didn't go and buy new shoes.